And now we present the next episode of our weekly radio drama, The Vatican Centuries, written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. Episode 26 is entitled Light and Shadows.
Little by little, the bounds of the known world were being extended.
In 1487, Bartholomew Dias rounded the southernmost tip of Africa.
In 1498, Vasco da Gama dropped anchor in the harbour of Calicut, opening the sea route to the wealth of India and the Far East.
But the event which eclipsed all others took place in the October of 1492, when Christopher Columbus, seeking a westward route to the Indies, stumbled upon a new continent in the west. The new world awaited its conquerors.
Back in the old world, rediscovery of the classics had led to progress in the natural sciences.
Artists contributed to a revolution in anatomy by dissection of human bodies.
Learning continued to flourish. With the advent of printing, literature was now within the reach of many.
And in the Vatican, a new kind of pope appeared, a temporal prince with few spiritual pretensions.
The Renaissance popes were men of their world, lovers of beauty and learning, intent on turning their earthly domain into a place of splendor for the admiration of all future generations.
If he had achieved nothing else in his life, Pope Sixtus IV would be remembered for the chapel in the Vatican which bears his name. This great hall was built between 1475 and 1480 by the architect Giovannino de' Dolci. The measurements of the chapel are those indicated in the Bible for the Temple of Solomon.
Today, the Sistine Chapel is visited chiefly for the frescoes on its ceiling and for the painting of the Last Judgment on the altar wall by Michelangelo. In times of conclave, crowds waiting in St. Peter's Square watch for the colour of the smoke that furls from the Sistine Chapel chimney.
The decoration of the Sistine Chapel took a full century, and when it was built, Michelangelo was as yet unborn.
When the building was completed, Pope Sixtus called in the greatest artists of the period to decorate it. Ghirlandaio, Michelangelo's own teacher.
Luca Signorelli.
Perugino and his talented pupil, Pinturicchio.
Rosselli, and in charge of all these masters, Sandro Botticelli.
The plan of the decoration of the walls was apparently worked out by Platina, the learned librarian of Pope Sixtus. The frescoes on the left-hand wall were to be scenes from the Old Testament, on the right from the New.
Sixtus IV was the first of the Renaissance popes, each of them eager to leave his mark on the city. Prolific builders, patrons of the arts, but at the same time men familiar with violence and treachery, and themselves by no means models of virtue.
A reaction to this state of temporal grandeur and spiritual poverty was inevitable.
It came from Florence, the city which had given the Renaissance its greatest impetus and its greatest artists. It came in the shape of a Dominican friar with burning eyes.
Girolamo Savonarola was born in Ferrara in 1452, son of the court physician. A pale, highly strung child, described as né bello né ridente, neither pretty nor cheerful. He grew up in the shadow of the Duke's castle, the dungeons of which were full of political prisoners.
Savonarola left home on St. George's Day, 1475, and entered the Dominican friary in Bologna. To his father he wrote that his reason for entering religion was the great wretchedness of the world and the sins of men.
7 years passed, and Savonarola was sent up and down the country to give retreats and sermons. Pico della Mirandola, the philosopher, heard him and was so impressed he persuaded Lorenzo de' Medici to appoint the friar as preacher at St. Mark's in Florence.
Savonarola's first impression of Florence when he arrived in the summer of 1489 was favourable. The works of art which abounded seemed like a hymn of praise to the Creator. But he soon found an inner emptiness behind the splendid culture and decided to oppose the classical revival with a religious one. Man must be reborn into the spirit of the early church. Simplicity was to be the keynote. Luxury was out. Nor did the zealous friar rate only the laity. He accused priests of having no time for God.
The people of Florence, at first indifferent, soon thronged to Savonarola's sermons. He was now in his late 30s, and not impressive to look at. What compelled the attention were his burning grey-green eyes and the emphatic gestures of his long, thin, almost transparent hands. He practiced severe penances, and everything about him spelt holiness.
The Florentines were conquered. They brought him their vanities, as he called them, and burned them in the public square. Books, paintings, musical instruments, perfumes, and fine clothes.
Savonarola's reforming intentions were admirable, but his fanaticism and drastic methods brought his ruin. His sermons became apocalyptic, and he prophesied destruction and divine vengeance.
The Borgia Pope, Alexander VI, had also been denounced by the Dominican, and when Savonarola claimed that his prophecies came directly from God, the Pope warned him, charged him with preaching dangerous doctrines, and finally excommunicated him.
Savonarola defied the Pope, celebrating 3 Christmas Masses and declaring the excommunication unjust and invalid. But he was treading dangerous ground, and when the Pope threatened Florence with an interdict and economic sanctions, the friar was asked to stop preaching and to produce a visible sign from God of his divine mission. Savonarola was unable to do so. He was thrown into prison, accused of heresy, schism, and disrespect for the Holy See. He was hanged on the 23rd of May, 1498, and his body was given to the flames.
Savonarola had been sincere but mistaken. In demanding the destruction of beauty, this joyless man had left no room for trust in the human spirit. But his influence lingered, and 60 years later, Michelangelo told his biographer he could still hear Savonarola's voice ringing in his ears.
Thou seest the great prelates with splendid mitres of gold and precious stones on their heads, and silver croziers in hand. There they stand at the altar, decked with fine copes and stoles of brocade, chanting those beautiful vespers and masses, and with so many grand ceremonies, so many organs and choristers, that thou art struck with amazement. But dost thou know what I would tell thee? In the primitive church, the chalices were of wood, the prelates of gold. In these days, the church hath chalices of gold and prelates of wood.
You've been listening to episode 26 of our weekly radio drama, The Vatican Centuries, written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. You can hear episode 27 at this same time next week.